There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 755, April 30th, 2018. Nasser.
Yahoo in Baku, what a Grand Prix. They call Azerbaijan land of fire. Ferrari and Seb were red hot. But when it was over, Lewis Hamilton was on top. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, is Ricciardo better than Vettel? Was it Max's fault, really? And Red Bull begin negotiations with Honda and... We need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Still very excited from the race on Sunday. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's not forget we have an interview with young American racer Cameron Doss.
Well, there you go. News to me, but I'll put it on anyway. Thank you, Nas.
Least I can do for you, sir.
Excellent. So, where in the hell was going on in Azerbaijan?
Man, what a race, what a race. I was actually in Manhattan, and I just saw the first, like, 8 or 10 laps. Then I had to hop on a bus to LaGuardia, and I was lucky enough to follow a live commentary from Mr. Ben Edwards, whose commentary I enjoy very much. And I just could not believe what I was hearing in the last 10, 15 laps. And, you know, the last few years, Clark, we are so used to pole winner being the race winner. This year, you may be faster by half a second in quali, but race win is no guarantee. And I see an interesting trend developing. A driver who should win the race is not winning. Will the tune of the season be safety dance? And we still have street races in Monaco, Canada, Sochi, I consider a street race, Singapore. And if you throw in a few rain-affected races, we may see more surprise race winners, which is only good for everybody.
No, I agree. It's getting a little on the bizarre side. And the thing at Red Bull, I mean, I think they even said that they had a chat with the boys before the Grand Prix, and something still happened.
Let me tell you the two luckiest drivers in the racing world today. Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, because they don't have Max Verstappen as teammate.
Yes, yes. Very true. That's an advantage right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it could be a championship-winning advantage. And, you know, I am now fully convinced that Max Verstappen, if you put him with Lewis as a teammate or Sebastian Vettel as a teammate, he will do to them what Senna did to Prost in 1988 at McLaren. He will make their life miserable.
I agree. The problem is he's making their team leaders miserable.
Yeah, but this time, you know, he was hit from behind, and they are talking about him moving and weaving, this and that. But this has to stop sooner or later. This has to.
I agree. It has to stop. And I thought that the blame was 50-50. In reality, I thought he did move, but he didn't move that much. I don't know. Ricciardo could have avoided it. It is what it is. I don't want to really get too involved in this, but Nas, let's just talk about qualifying first.
Yes, sir. Well, the front row, which was expected, 4x4, and that's what we want, so we can have this mano-a-mano battle between the two leading combatants of the day and the two leading teams of the day. But, you know, I have to agree with Toto and Lewis that Ferrari now has the best package. What say you?
Yeah, it's starting to look like that, but, man, I think people are catching up. I think Renault really looked good in the beginning of this race. I was stunned. I know it's a street race, and there's a little bit of an advantage if you're underpowered. But and certainly, Ferrari seems to have flat-out pace this year. And I don't know. You know, Lewis Hamilton, he was still on the front row. Mercedes is still fast. The package is still there. So I'm not convinced that Ferrari has made such huge leaps.
Well, you know, LCH was on pole in the season opener in Australia, and since then, Sebastian has gone three in a row, and it was pole number 53 in Baku for the one-time love child of Dr. Marco, and even Kimi was looking good for his first pole since Monaco last year, but he made a mistake in turn 16, later saying no excuse for his F-up. Kimi will be Kimi, you know, short and simple. There was a near mid-air collision at about 180 miles per hour between Pierre Gasly and Brendan Hartley in Cali, while the Kiwi was flying at low speed due to a flat tire, and Pierre was totally pissed off. And this is worth watching on YouTube in case you missed it. A second serious misunderstanding between the two teammates in recent weeks. I think they need more E and F1 harmony at Toro Rosso, just like at the mothership. What say you?
Yes, yes. We don't need harmony. I like the battles, but it's pretty interesting. And I have to admit, Toro Rosso is looking better with the Honda package. And we'll see if Red Bull chooses that route or not at the end of the season. But nevertheless, yeah, I don't really need harmony. I just want action.
Action on the track. And five teams to complete the Colli's thing. Five teams got both cars in Q3. For Ferrari, Seb was on pole and Kimi sixth. For Mercedes, LCH second, Bottas third. For Red Bull, Danny Boy fourth and Max fifth. Row four was all Force India, Esteban Ocon ahead of Sergio Perez. Row five was occupied by Renault drivers, Nico ahead of Carlito. But the German driver had a five-place grid penalty. And they mentioned during the broadcast, you know, telecast, that in the last 28 races, Hülkenberg has been out-qualified by his teammate only once. I didn't get a chance to, you know, look in all the data to verify this, but probably he's correct. It really speaks well for Nico Hülkenberg, you know. Just very sad how the luck and time has not been on his side, just like Romain Grosjean, and also we can say Fernando Alonso since 2007.
Yes, that's true. I agree. Fernando Alonso's luck has changed, but at least he's got two championships under his belt. Hülkenberg is yet to get a podium.
Yes, that is very true. So, you want to talk about the start of the race?
The start of the race, very exciting, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It started with Archie Bargi, Esteban Ocon, and Kimi Raikkonen getting physical. The slow-mo of the carbon fiber shredding was very impressive. And this is only the second time that Ocon has been a DNF in his so far impressive Formula One career. He's also, you know, a young whippersnapper who is always in a rush, especially when he's racing his teammate. But this time the victim was somebody else. Well, actually, he was himself the victim because Kimi was able to continue. And man, what's up with this guy, Fernando Alonso? I thought he was done. Totally done.
It's called el machismo.
Yeah, there is no question about it. I mean, there was even talk of floor damage and, you know, that he may not be able to continue. But unbelievable. Very, very impressive race car driver, even when he does not have that package. And that's, you know, a friend of mine used to say to me a lot that winning the race in the best car is great, but winning in a car that has no business winning is magic. And this guy is the Houdini of Oviedo.
Well said, sir. Well said.
Yes. And anything else caught your attention in the early? You know, talking of Renaults, man, I know they were on a different tire compound, but the way Carlito and Nico were going, it took me back to the days of the Renaults of Arnoux and Prost, but of course this was Carlito and Hulk. And then they looked very, very good, you know. Even if you have the faster tire, you still need a fast engine and a fast car and drivers to put it all together. They were looking, I hope they win a race this year. It'll be very good.
They were looking fantastic. Carlito was, I mean, the way they were dicing it up after the safety car with the Red Bulls was exciting, to say the least. And the way they passed the Red Bulls, Max didn't like it, Ricciardo didn't like it, and I was getting pumped up.
Yeah, and there is a lot of throat slitting in the mid-pack, you know. I mean, we saw what happened with Russian Sergei Sirotkin. He was out early, and there was a lot of fender bender and, let's guess, physical with several drivers, not to mention Ricciardo and Max in the early stages of not just early, but each and every stage of the race.
Correct, yeah. The interplay between Max and Ricciardo was absolutely fascinating. And, I mean, I don't mind banging. I like banging wheels a little bit, but and they certainly did that, but I thought it was exciting. The race was lovely at that moment.
Yeah, you know, and when the Red Bulls finally clashed and took each other out, the only question I had was what took them so long, because they had touched a few times before. And I'll tell you, man, with all the talk of Max to be kinder and gentler racer and cool down, Baku was proof positive that he is there to race and race very hard for any and all positions. And Niki Lauda said it was 70% Max's fault. Dr. Marco, he was very unhappy. And the guy who was really pissed off when they tried to interview him was Christian Horner. And both Christian Horner and Dr. Marco said, you know, we don't have team orders. We don't want team orders. We want these drivers to race. But look what they gave us today.
Yeah, so. And they need to remember they had team orders when Sebastian Vettel was winning world championships over there. Multiple 22 Mark Webber.
Yeah, multi 21, but nobody was listening to those orders.
Yes.
The classic thing, you know, about that era, Mark and Sebastian Vettel, was when they clashed in Turkey, and the only person who thought Mark was responsible, there were two, Sebastian Vettel and Dr. Marco.
Exactly. The important people.
But I have to say, you know, in the early stages, late stages of that season, 2010, I believe it's when Sebastian won the championship first time. I remember media and a lot of people were saying that to protect Mark Webber's championship, they should have team orders and have Sebastian help Mark Webber, because he had such a huge lead over Sebastian at that time. And Red Bull people said, no, we're going to let them race. And I cannot believe that Sebastian Vettel came. You know, the only time he led the championship was once after the final race, and that's all that mattered, you know.
That's all that's mattering. Yes, and yeah. This clash between Ricciardo and Max could continue for quite some time, because Max is not going to relinquish.
No, Max is not. Max is going to take it to the max. It's simple as that. And there is a lot of talk now, chatter on the interweb, that Red Bull has to give Renault an answer by the end of this month, I believe, if they will continue with their engine or not. So they're already talking to Honda, and Red Bull has requested Daniel Ricciardo to give them their decision by summer break. And, I mean, Daniel Ricciardo can still win the championship with Max as a teammate. Because, you know, if you don't fight with Max, I mean, let's just put it this way. And I'm convinced, I don't know if you would agree with me, if Daniel had let him not race him so hard, I mean, chances were very high that Max will take out Bottas or LCH or Sebastian. I mean, he has a variety of drivers to take out, you know, who are trying to win a race. And especially in a street race, this guy is stay away from him, you know.
Yeah, so in other words, let him go ahead, wipe out the front of the spear, and then win the race.
Exactly, just like Danny did in Azerbaijan last year.
That's beautiful.
Because if you look at, we've only had four races, and he's pretty much involved with something, and I'm loving it. I think the guy's a tremendous racing talent. I don't think he should slow down. Maybe more careful, but, you know, that's just talk. But it's exciting to watch this talent, you know, 20 years old.
I agree. I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah. Can you imagine this kid in a, can you imagine if he was in a Mercedes last year?
Yeah. I'm trying not to imagine these things, because I'm just trying to stay grounded.
You know, he is like, you know, he's like Ayrton Senna, Jacques Villeneuve, Nigel Mansell, all packed in one driver, you know. Very talented, very aggressive, out of control, but just a lot of fun to watch. There's no question about it.
Yes, no, it is a lot of fun to watch, I have to admit. And I enjoyed this Grand Prix, even though Even the ending was a shocker.
Oh, it was. I never thought. Well, you know, when they had the final caution period, and there were like how many, 5 laps to run?
Correct.
One thing I knew that Sebastian was going to try something to win the race, but I had a very strong feeling leading the championship, he will not do a Max or a Maldonado, and that Bottas will win. And I figured Lewis will try very hard to get second, but, you know, they were not going to ask Bottas to slow down so LCH can win his first race. So I never thought 5 laps to go that Lewis was going to win the race. But boy, how it turned out.
It was stunning.
Yeah, unbelievable.
The debris now is more fierce than ever before.
Yeah, especially on a street course. You know, it's hard to believe that this is Lewis and Mercedes' first win of the season, and it's coming in the fourth round. Ever since his pole in Albert Park, if I remember correctly, he was like half a second faster than the second place guy. Since then, he has been under Ferrari red mist. Before the race, this was interesting. Bernie said Lewis is not the racer he used to be, to which the four-time world champion responded by saying, "We will find out at the end of the season," which I think is the best answer. Let the result speak for itself. And Toto said, as usual, Bernie is throwing a grenade. But he's now back in business after winning in Baku. LCH now leads the championship, but both he and Toto know the days of Uber domination are basically over. There is work to be done. I think the red and silver ding-dong will continue. With the cars being so reliable, it really will boil down to who makes less of a mistake, less mistakes during the season. I know Lewis, as great as he is, I think he makes, at his caliber, far too many mistakes. But Sebastian also cracks very easily under pressure. And we saw that on Sunday, too. Basically, Lewis will have to get on podium on days when the pace is not there to pounce on the prancing horse. Equally, or even more importantly, as we have said earlier, he must stay away from MC Hammer. Can't touch this. MC as in Master of Collision, and we know who the wrecker is.
Well, I think that if Ricciardo was making the move on Bottas to take the lead, he would have made that stick. Overbraking, lost positions, Vettel really suffered. And like you said, LCH has only won one race this season so far, but he's now leading the championship, and that's all that takes. A couple of more screw-ups by Ferrari, and Red Bull could get in the thick of things. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, if there were team orders at Red Bull, they probably can challenge for the championship.
Yes, but they're going to take each other out a few more times this season.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, they can use Max as a, I'm not saying they should, but they can use him as a tracer bullet, you know, go after the competition, not your.
Exactly.
Do you have a solution for the Red Bull issue? Wonderful problem. They have two great drivers.
The only solution is team orders, but they're not going to give team orders. And Max won't even listen to team orders. Neither would Ricciardo. So I think Max has got to become a little more mature. And Ricciardo's got to realize, while Max is a madman, it is best to let him go by and take out the front row.
Yeah, yes. But right now, nothing better than a mad dog and a determined dingo on the track. I am loving it. And, you know, would like to hear some comments. Listeners, you know, what they think, who is at fault, should there be any team orders? Even now, Dr. Marco is saying we're not interested in team orders.
I agree. No, we'll just see what happens. We know what they're capable of doing. Now we need to see what they could slow down and maybe do. But I think the other story was certainly with the chaos done, blown up Pirelli tire on Bottas's lost race. I mean, that was stunning to be leading and then to lose the race and not finish. I guess he finished last, technically. But that was a lot of points they lost. Ferrari is now leading in the Constructors' Championship. But Sergio Perez, definitely another great podium for the Mexican. And Carlos Sainz Jr. gave Renault a great finish in fifth. And, of course, Charles Leclerc. Incroyable, mais vrai.
Yeah, Kimi Räikkönen was second, and good to see him on the podium, but with mounting mistakes and colleagues blown away by three different teammates at Ferrari since winning the World Championship way back in 2007. I think he will continue at Ferrari if Charles Leclerc does not deliver in F1 this season, as Ferrari do not want a civil war a la 2007 McLaren, or present-day Red Bull. I said this before and I'll say it again, under normal circumstances this season, I do not see Kimi leading a Ferrari 1-2. Do you?
No. This is Vettel's team.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, F1 has this logo, Engineered Insanity.
Yeah.
I think Ferrari's logo is Engineered Sanity, which means that Seb will prevail. And you mentioned Sergio Perez on the podium, which was very, very good and very impressive. And this is his first points and first podium of the season for him and also for the team. He is now the only driver to be on the podium more than once in the short history of Azerbaijan Grand Prix. And it also makes him the most successful Mexican driver in terms of podium finishes. You know, the other day I was watching a preview of, I don't know if it was this race or some other race, and then there was a brief mention of him, Sergio, almost winning the Malaysian Grand Prix. And I remember thinking at that time, you know, how wonderful it would have been for the Mexican nation had he won that race. Because I think to this day, Pedro Rodriguez remains the only Mexican ever to win a Formula One race. And it was also very good for Force India. And you know, their this head honcho there, American guy from Detroit, Otmar Szafnauer. You probably saw heard his interview when Ocon collided with Raikkonen. He was really pissed off at Kimi Raikkonen. Apparently, they filed a sort of a protest or complaint with the FIA. But, you know, these things are going to happen in racing. Bastian, Sebastian Vettel was fourth. Easy to say this, but if Seb had not tried the max move on Bottas, even without winning, he would have increased his lead over Lewis. After the race, he said he was happy he at least tried, but I am sure he is not feeling the same way about somebody else leading the championship now. And it's interesting, you know, before Baku, Mercedes had not won a race, but they were leading the championship. Now that they have won a race, they are trailing Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship. So it's a pretty exciting season we have going here. And you mentioned Carlos Sainz, top five for Renault. And his teammate hit the wall of voodoo in Baku and was out on lap 10. That was pretty disappointing, man. I was hoping for, my hope was that maybe finally Nico Hülkenberg will get a podium here. But it was not to be.
I was stunned when he hit the wall. It was very unlike him. Something happened.
Yeah. Well, he made a mistake. That's what happened, I think. Okay, Charles Leclerc, the runaway 2017 Formula 2 champion, had a great race here last year in the F2 Championship. This year, he put in another great show to score his first points in Formula 1. His sixth place finish was the best result for Alfa Romeo Sauber since the 2015 Russian Grand Prix at Sochi, when Felipe Nasr finished in the same position. Now, this is very interesting, and I did look it up to verify this. This is apparently first championship point for a driver from Monaco since Louis Chiron came third in the first F1 race in Monte Carlo way back in 1950. That race was round two in that year's inaugural F1 championship, and as we all know by now, also marked the first appearance of Scuderia Ferrari. So, great day for Charles Leclerc in Monaco. You know, I was thinking, for him to depose for Kimi at Ferrari, I think he will have to score in most of the races. And if he can score twice as many points as Ericsson, then that will make a very good statement for him to replace Kimi. But I personally won't be surprised if they give Kimi another one-year extension the way Ferrari is going, especially if Sebastian wins the championship.
You know, nothing surprises me at Ferrari. Kimi could very well still be there.
Yeah, you know, the media is very upset with Ferrari because apparently they have put this no talking to the media. If you see, very rarely you see drivers being interviewed in depth. You know, they do what is required by the FIA, but that's not very good, I have to say.
It's not, but sometimes it's best.
Yeah. You know what they say, lose lips, sink ships.
Exactly.
Okay, now we come to your Dios. Nando was seventh. He had a double done blowed up, and the way his car was crab-like in the pit lane, I thought he was done for the day. Sucker came back to be in the points. That was serious machismo. I really think the FIA and Liberty Media Powers B should broker a deal to put him in one of the top teams. Imagine Fernando Alonso in the same team with any of these mega stars, Seb, Max, or the Fellini flick we have seen before. The raging teammate to LCA on the fields of F1 dreams and nightmares. The Spanish flame spreads through the battlefield, burning down the house. Would you like to see him at one of the top teams next year?
Well, you know, McLaren used to be a top team.
used to be.
It's amazing, isn't it? Williams used to be a top team.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even if you look at Ferrari, last time their driver won a championship was 2007. And when was the last time McLaren driver won a championship? 2008. Wow. And what is really sad about Williams, the last person who gave them a victory was Pastor Maldonado.
Crashado.
I'm not even sure if they want to advertise that.
Probably not. So.
Yeah. You know, when I was at that some years ago with Dr. Miguel at the preseason testing in Jerez, Bottas previous year was teammate to Maldonado. And I asked him and a couple of other media people asked him how was working with Maldonado. You know, he didn't say a word. He just rolled his eyes and shook his head.
That's beautiful. So Flavio was in Baku.
Yes, and the wonderful and charming off-the-wall manager of Mr. Fernando Alonso was there. And what do you think he was doing there?
I think they were talking a little chit-chat about future championships.
I heard. I've not been able to get into more of this, but you mean Baku, Azerbaijan, they have a lot of oil and, you know, the ruling family is enjoying the good life as they do in that part of the world. And I read somewhere recently that Flavio had a big part in putting together this race, which wouldn't surprise me if he has some sort of a hand somewhere, because he was a real crony of Bernie Ecclestone, as you may recall.
I do recall. Bravo, prego.
Yeah, but when the wall came down, Bernie couldn't save him.
Well, it's when Nelsinho hit the wall.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, you know, how Nelsinho didn't say anything till it was to his advantage. Amazing how things work, huh?
Yeah, he's a tough guy.
Okay, moving forward, Lance Stroll was 8th. Last year, the teenager was on the podium. This year, he brought the first and much-needed points for the team. And it remains to be seen when his teammate, Mr. Comrade Sorokin, will score a point. Stoffel Vandoorne made both McLarens in the points by finishing 9th, and the final point had historical significance for the land of Bruce McLaren and Chris Amon, as it was the first championship point earned by Brendan Hartley. And now that he's a regular at Supercard, we no longer call him Tom Petty of Motorsport. And thanks to Dr. Marco's rarely seen kindness, at least in terms of towards drivers, Hartley is no longer living like a refugee. So good for him and good for Kiwi Motorsport. And here is my clerk of the day. Romain Grosjean, Brembo, Hitco or Carbon Industries. No matter what brakes are on the fake Ferrari, the Franco-Swiss driver has a fondue meltdown on a regular basis. Your thoughts on Romain Grosjean crash behind a safety. Let me ask you a question. I don't think even Maldonado crashed behind a safety car.
No, I mean, you might as well just be Pablo Montoya and crash the jet dryer. But
yes.
But this was terrible. Embarrassing. To blame anything but yourself was ridiculous. I feel bad for Haas. I mean, they got to get rid of this guy.
We tried to blame it on somebody said on their team radio, Marcus, we got hit by Marcus Ericsson.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But I think that was a mistake. And but yeah, this thing is not going very good for him.
No, he's done.
Yeah, I think he's he needs to go. He needs to join. He wants to join Ferrari. He can join Fisichella at Ferrari and drive the GT car.
Well, he could drive the F-150.
Oh yes, yeah, that would be nice. Yeah. So we'll see. So, you know, Daniel Ricciardo, like I said, he's in the news for where he will be next year. Maybe this race on Sunday will help him make a decision. And because, you know, Red Bull, if they can bring back Brendan Hartley, I'm sure they can give somebody else a chance too. Would you like to see Fernando Alonso at Red Bull?
Oh, I don't know. Not with Honda Motors. We don't want to hear that again.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was reunited with McLaren. Let's see how that went. Wouldn't it be something if he's reunited with Honda? I don't even know if Honda would want him there, you know.
That's true. They would have to pay for it.
Yeah. And they were paying like, I don't know, $25, $30 million for his salary.
For the GP2 engine. Ah!
Yeah. And it was said at Suzuka at all the places, man. I mean, talk about insulting right, left, and center. Shall we take a look at the championship standings now, sir?
Please.
Okay, let's see what we have here. Survey says, new leader, In the silver corner, Lewis Hamilton, 70 points. Second in the red corner, Sebastian Vettel on 66. Kimi is third on 48 points. Fellow Finn Bottas, fourth on 40. Ricciardo, fifth, 37. And amazing Alonso is sixth with 28 points. Romain Grosjean and Sergei Sirotkin are the only two drivers without any points after four races. While Mercedes turned the table on Ferrari in the Drivers' Championship, Ferrari had turned the table on Mercedes in the Constructors' Championship, leading the British-based German team 114 points to 100. Red Bull is a distant third on 55 points. Now, you know, with the next round being in Barcelona and the start of the European season, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm thinking business will be restored to normal frequency. You know, either Lewis will be on pole and run away, or Sebastian will do. I'm not expecting much action like the first four races. What do you think, sir?
It depends. It's all up to Red Bull and up to Renault and up to McLaren. We'll see what happens. But Barcelona is going to change. It's going to be back to normal. I see Ferrari maybe locking out the front row a number of times. But we'll see, because Monaco is a different animal, and that's going to give Red Bull a big chance. Red Bull could dominate at Monaco.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. Well, you know, if Max is on pole, he will win the race. But if he's not on pole, a couple of drivers are going down, and going down hard.
Exactly.
I know you don't watch IndyCar racing, but there was a time in IndyCar racing when Eric Zanardi was winning a lot of races. I don't remember the exact season, but one season, because he had like two or three very dominating seasons, but one season really stood out. He did a lot of Max-type moves, pushed people out, they spun, and whatever it was, if anybody would continue, it would be Alex Zanardi. So let's see what Max brings in Monte Carlo.
So exciting. Nas, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we have to go back to business as usual and say greetings and racing regards. Today we have motorsports action from Paris to the Pampas. First, we go back to Baku for round two of Formula 2. Very exciting feature race on Saturday. One night in Bangkok of big celebrations as Alexander Albon becomes the first driver from Thailand to win an F2 race and from pole position with authority. Okay, now let me tell you what happened. He was jumped by Mercedes junior George Russell at the start, and the two engaged in a close battle. Albon was able to get ahead before Russell came into the pit. After the frontrunners had completed their pit stops, Russell was in the lead, but Dutch driver Nyck de Vries did a Max Verstappen on him. This allowed Albon to take the lead, and he went on to win after 25 laps of the Baku City Circuit. Jack Aitken was second, with Italian Antonio Fuoco third. Lando Norris, winner of the opening race, was on front row but stalled on the grid before formation lap. And Lando had a lot of these stalling issues in European F3 last year, but he still won the championship. He started from the pits and finished 6. Big international mix of talented drivers we have in Formula 2 this season, sir. Race winner Albon's parentage is British and Thai. Third place man Aitken is of British and Korean heritage. This you will find interesting. Nyck de Vries' dad is Dutch and his mother is from the Orient. Not sure which country. His sister's name is Seychelles, and not too long ago, she was the girlfriend of a very young, up-and-coming fast driver called Max Verstappen, who has now arrived on the scene and made quite a name for himself. The sprint race on Sunday was won by George Russell. Very impressive performance after starting on the sixth row, and this is his first win in the series. He won the GP3 last year, and he is part of the Toto's Wolfpack of young drivers. Championship standings, Lando Norris still leads 55 points to 41 over Albon. Round 3 will be in Barcelona. Now we go to your favorite song, Sous le ciel de Paris. Formula E drivers were in action under Paris skies, and Parisians were lay excited as local garçon Jean-Éric Wynne was the winner. Lucas de Grassi was second, and our favorite, Sam Bird, third man on the podium. World Rally Championship from Argentina. Oh, what a feeling for Toyota as Ott Tanak from Estonia took victory in his Yaris. Belgian Thierry Neuville was second ahead of his Spanish Hyundai teammate Danny Sordo. Now, some news on Jenson Button. JB is on the Nando program. The 2009 world champion will race in World Endurance Championship in the 2018-19 season. Vitaly Petrov and Mikhail Loshin will be his comrades in the SMP Racing LMP1 car. This is the same bank that is bankrolling Sir Austin's ride in Formula 1. Cousin Felipe Nasr will also race at Le Mans this year, so I'm very excited and happy for him. Now, lack of results would mean heads will roll sooner or later, and this is now the case of Goss is gone. Lack of results at McLaren, despite having an F1 engine this season, has resulted in head starting to roll in Woking. Chassis man Tim Goss has been removed from his position. I don't have information as to if he has left the team, or initially I heard he will be assigned to some other job within the company, but we will see. And finally, all rise for
Le NASCAR.
Thank you. The race at Talladega in Sweet Home, Alabama, was won by Joey Logano. So there you have it, sir. And shall we proceed with goodie bag?
Goodie bag. Let me see. Let me get. Yep. Here's the text.
We are in the merry month of May, which means two of the biggest races on the same weekend on both sides of the pond, Monte Carlo and the Indy 500. So I thought it would be a good idea to talk about some of the F1 drivers who have raced at the Brickyard. Fernando Alonso was top of the town last year when he skipped Monaco to race at Indy. Sadly, he had to suffer a GP2 engine issue in IndyCar racing also. Talk about karma. Arnaiz came within few laps of winning the 500 in his rookie year, 1993. Montoya, Alexander Rossi, Graham Hill did win on their debut at the Brickyard. Jack Villeneuve won in his second attempt at the Brickyard in 1995. Monty dominated in 2000 with Chip Ganassi Racing. I was at that race and I believe he led 167 of 200 laps. He was started from the front row, but he was not on pole. But a very, very dominating performance from Mr. Montoya. Graham Hill survived the opening lap carnage in 1966 to win in the beautiful American Red Bull Special Lola. Jim Clark, well, this was quite an achievement. Jim Clark won both the F1 World Championship and the Indy 500 in 1965. Mario Andretti won at Indy for Andy Granatelli in 1969. And of course, he won the F1 Championship in 1978. Lotus. Peter Revson, winner of the 1973 British and Canadian Grand Prix, took pole at Indy in 1971 and finished second to Alan Surtees Jr. David Hogg, the original founder of the Dan Blurred Up Syndrome, was 20th in his Indy debut. Other famous F1 names who have raced at Indy: Jack Brabham, Dan Gurney, Clay Regazzoni, Alberto Ascari, Denny Hulme, and Jackie Stewart. Teo Fabi, who never won in F1, started from pole in his first attempt at Indy in 1982. And of course, Sato San and the scream that was heard all around the world last year. There you have it, folks. Men who made a splash on both sides of the pond. And finally, Mr. Rogers, we come to famous last word. This is what Toto Wolff had to say when asked if he will bring Nando to partner Lewis at Mercedes. He said, and I quote, "You don't need another woman when you already have a beautiful wife." End of quote. Thank you for listening and being faithful to F1 Weekly.
Keep up the good work, Nass. Another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now, why don't we introduce the surprise interview, please?
Yes, sir. This is our second conversation with young American racer from Baltimore, Maryland area, Cameron Das. His dad is originally from India. Cameron started racing here. He dominated the inaugural Formula 4 championship in the U.S. 2 years ago, won the last 8 races in a row. Then he moved to a British F3, won a race there last year. He was teammate to our friend Mr. Inam Ahmed and impressed the team and his co-drivers very much. I think he finished in the top 5 in the championship. And of course, like all young drivers, good drivers, he is aiming for Formula 1 one day. So this year he is racing in the series called European Open Formula. This series previously was known as Spanish F3. And then, when FIA got involved, they told them not to use the F3 name. So now it's called Euro Open Formula. And they race in Spain and some other tracks outside Spain. Most of the tracks they race are F1 tracks. So Cameron is getting a lot of good experience. And we wish him all the best. He has been very competitive. And they've only had like one round so far. And we wish him all the best. And I thank him, thank his dad for arranging this interview. And I thank him and I wish him all the best. And we'll keep reporting on his progress throughout the season. Okay, folks, on the line we have Mr. Cameron Das, young American talent racing in Europe. Cameron, welcome back to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Good to have you back on the show. You are racing a Formula 3 car in the Euro Formula Open Championship in 2018. The season started at Estoril with a podium finish and fastest lap for you. Tell us about the weekend, a little bit background also on the series, please.
Yeah, so the championship is really kind of in between, I would say, British F3 and FIF3, and it runs a very similar car, FIF3 car, just we run Michelin tires, and we have a different power plant that Toyota engine, and so it's very similar, and it's a really good basically preparation for going into FIF3. And so our first weekend was last weekend in Estoril, and it went really well. I came away, I think, tied for fourth in the championship with my teammate, and we saw a lot of really different conditions throughout the whole weekend. From red flag conditions, wet conditions, and then, we went all the way to, full dry running with a close to track record breaking lap time. So, it was definitely a really good experience, and I think we had a pretty decent result for the first weekend.
That's good. Now, Estoril is the track where Ayrton Senna won his first Grand Prix. What is your impression of this circuit?
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites. I mean, compared to some of the bigger European tracks, it's, I guess, less forgiving, and it's maybe not as technical, but it is. It does have a good balance of fast and flowing corners, and then a couple of really tricky and technical slow-speed corners as well, so I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Now, 6 of the 8 tracks on the calendar are currently used by Formula One also. How long does it take for you to feel comfortable when you visit a track you have not raced before?
I'd say to become comfortable, probably 4 or 5 laps really is all it takes, because a lot of the preparation work I do is on the simulator, and that's pretty accurate these days, so generally doesn't take too long to get used to it. When it comes to finding, like, the last couple of hundredths or tenths or whatever, that takes a couple more sessions to really nail. But yeah, it doesn't take too long, especially with these really safe and wide open European tracks.
You also answered one of my next question, which was about, I've been to Carlin Motorsports facility in England, very impressive. And I was going to ask you if you're spending a lot of time in their simulator. So is it very close to, when you do on a simulator, as to the real thing?
It depends on which simulator you're using, because sometimes, like, the graphics won't be, you know, that detailed, but it's really the track surface that's important. So, you know, the simulator I use has laser scan tracks, so literally the entire surface is scanned to within an eighth of an inch of the real life track. So any kind of bump or any kind of curves or anything like that is pretty much exactly how it is in real life. So it's a very handy tool.
Wow. And while we are on the subject, are you also employing or taking advantage of a driver coach at this stage of your career?
Currently, no. Certainly when I was in the States, I used a driver coach or several driver coaches. At the moment, Carlin basically, you know, through their really good engineering program, they have a lot of people on the team that sort of take on the role of driver coaching. So at the moment, it's kind of just my engineer and my data engineer that gave me coaching advice.
Okay. Now, you said these cars are very similar to the British F3. Of course, here you're using a Toyota motor. Have you found something that was more challenging for you in this car than compared to the British F3 car?
I mean, this car has quite a bit more downforce than the British F3 car, but about the same power. So when it comes to cornering speed, it's obviously a lot higher. In some aspects, it's easier to drive. Like in high-speed corners, but at the same time, it's a much more physical car to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've had to work really hard in the gym recently to be able to cope with the G-forces in this car, but yeah, it's really enjoyable, actually.
So, well, like you said, you're working hard, so I hope we don't see you like Piquet collapsing on the podium or Mansell collapsing while pushing his car.
Yeah. No, that's hopefully never going to happen, but these are definitely, the cars are getting much tougher the farther up I go, so I can only imagine what these new F2 cars or cars like that are feeling like.
Okay. Now, based on what you have experienced in preseason testing and the opening round, how is the depth of competition in this series compared to British F3 last year?
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar. I mean, we've had the first weekend, so it's difficult to say exactly how competitive it is, but certainly, you know, if you look at some of the qualifying results, particularly in the Sunday qualifying in the wet, I mean, the top six were within like something like 2.5 tenths or something. It was very close, and I think we had like five different teams within the top five or something like that. So it's definitely close, and it's not just between drivers, but it's between teams as well.
Okay. Now, I have a feeling that your main competition for the championship will come from South American drivers, namely Felipe Drugovich of Brazil and Marco Siebert of Argentina. Any other drivers you see as major challengers for the championship?
I think also my teammate, Mateus Iorio, who's also racing for Carlin this year, is also very quick. And, you know, we both had a couple of issues that hindered us a little bit, so I don't think either of us showed where we really completely are. But also, not just Mateus, but Ben Biscal, who's racing for Tio Martin. He had success in the Winter Series in Paul Ricard, so, you know, I have no doubts that there will be at least five or six of us fighting for the championship this year.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Winning is always the goal, and you are already a championship-winning driver at a young age. What are your expectations from this season? And what kind of a result, let's say you don't win the championship, I hope you do, but let's say if you don't win the championship, what is the minimum you will accept that, okay, I did a good job and I'm happy with what I delivered?
Yeah, I think, you know, with any championship I'm in, you know, even if it's just considered a learning championship, I'm always shooting to win that championship or at least win as many races as possible. So, you know, that's the ultimate goal. But I think I'd be, you know, really happy with a top three finish in this championship.
Great. Okay, in January of this year, you raced in the Toyota Racing Series in New Zealand, which has become a very popular series in the start of this year. 15 races in 5 weeks. Was that more fun or more stress, and how did that go for you?
I think it was actually a lot of fun, and you know, it's one of the few series where you have such back-to-back-to-back racing. So really, you get out of the car, and before you know it, you're back into it again. So everything's just super fresh in your mind, and it allows you to just you know, kind of roll on from weekend to weekend rather than, you know, and sometimes in these European championships, you'll be in the car once a month or something like that. And it's hard to develop as quickly as you can in New Zealand. So it was incredibly valuable. I wouldn't call it stressful at all because the whole point of it is just to develop yourself and not really necessarily worry about the results so much. I had a lot of difficulties with mechanical issues that were just no one's fault, really. So when it came to points right from the beginning of the season, I just basically said, okay, well, at this point, due to the point system, it'll be hard for me to fight for a championship at this point, so I'm just going to focus on myself, focus on driving, learn as much as I can, and be ready for the Euro Formula Championship.
And your favorite track in New Zealand?
Ooh, well, there's actually quite a few good ones. They're very different from the European circuits. They're very tight, usually very short as well, more similar to American tracks, actually. But I'd say my favorite was probably Teretonga, which was a very high-speed track and very scary, actually.
Okay, interesting. Now, last year you had a race-winning season in the British F3, and as you know, I was at one of your races at Snetterton. And you finished fifth in the championship, which is very impressive, since it was your first year racing in Europe. How would you rate your 2017 season on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best?
I'd say it was a solid 7. My goal for the season was to finish top 3, which I knew was a difficult goal to begin with, considering it was, as you mentioned, my first year in Europe, but I thought it was achievable. And I think it was very achievable. I mean, I think I was on par to do third in the championship, even like, you know, halfway through the last race, and then due to an incident, I think I ended up finishing 14th in that race or something, and that pushed me from third to fifth. So, you know, it was definitely achievable, and I think I proved I was competitive in a European setting. So, you know, I think I got exactly what I wanted out of that championship.
What were some of the highs and lows of the season for you?
Definitely, one of the highs was the race weekend at Rockingham. I think I had 2 pole positions, podium each race, plus a win in the second race from 7th position. So that was certainly, I think, the highlight of the season, but definitely one of the lowlights would probably be the last race in Donington, where I was on pole and leading the race for, I think, the first 8 laps, and then the front wing fell off due to an incident on the first lap, and so I was forced to change wings and drop back to last.
Okay. Now that you have done a full season of racing in Europe, and you have a pretty good idea what's happening there now, what will be your advice to young other Americans who are, you know, planning to cross the pond in the next few years? Any suggestions you may have for them for the do's and don'ts of first year in Europe?
Yeah, definitely. First year in Europe, I would say just don't get frustrated. Even when things don't seem to go your way, or you feel like the car isn't there, you know, there's always something to be gained, even in a position of weakness. So, just keep your head cool, write down as much as you can, because chances are you're probably going to forget it at some point, and it might be useful. In fact, it almost always is useful at some point. So, yeah, just write things down and keep your head cool.
And Cameron, if I may ask, during the racing season, are you based in Europe, or you come back home after every race?
No, I'm based in Farnham, which is the town that Carlin's actually based out of.
Oh, very interesting. Okay, now, any plans to do a few races here in the United States during the season?
I'm definitely considering it. Nothing's set in stone at the moment, but I would stay tuned because there certainly is the possibility of doing that.
Yeah, I understand. And if you do, can you share with us what series would be? What level of racing would you do here?
I can't share that at the moment, but very soon I will try and share that information with you.
Yeah, we would like to have a scoop on that, on your career. Okay?
For sure.
Okay, great. Now, Formula One is your goal, and your thoughts on how the F1 season has started, and who will have 5 championships first, Lewis or Sebastian?
Ooh, yeah, it's been very tight these first couple of races, and I've certainly been surprised with the performance of the Ferraris this year. I think they made some questionable strategy calls, but certainly the performance of the car is undeniable. So, you know, it's really either person's game at this point, but I think Lewis is a little better at keeping his head cool, and he's been, you know, winning championships the last or several times in the last few years, so I think he's a little bit more used to being in that kind of position, whereas Sebastian might need to kind of remember back to the Red Bull days to fully eke out a championship. So I think at the moment Lewis has the advantage.
Who is your favorite, not just between them, but from the whole grid?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say Lewis is my favorite driver. I think Alonso is probably my favorite at the moment because, you know, this year he's in a bit of a better position than he was last year with the Renault unit. But even when he had the disadvantage of the horsepower deficit last year, I mean, he did have some pretty spectacular results with that much of a deficit. So I think he's probably the, at least in my opinion, the most talented driver in that field.
Yeah, he is something special, that's for sure. Okay, man, I really appreciate your time. You're leaving tomorrow. I wish you all the best, and we will definitely follow your career race by race. And hopefully, you know, who knows, I may see you at a racetrack this year.
Well, thank you so much for having me on again.
Okay, thank you, and please give my hello to your mom and dad.
I will, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Take care, bye-bye.
Cameron, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. NAS, another check's in the mail, of course. Any predictions for Spain, real quickly?
I have a feeling it will be Sebastian Vettel on the top step, and maybe Lewis in the Ferrari sandwich.
Now, come on, it's Spain. Only one guy could possibly win.
I said Sebastian, and Kimi third, and Lewis second.
Okay, I say Fernando first, Nico Hülkenberg second, Carlos Sainz Jr. third.
Very good, sir.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
I know.
Part of the Dreamer group, then.
We do dream, so somebody has to. Anyway, I'm just trying to mix it up a little bit, Nash. You have to understand, without me, everything is boring.
Yes.
So keep up the good work, Nash. I want to thank all the listeners who continue to listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.